Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Dodd-Frank and Whistleblower Retaliation Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On February 21st, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Digital Realty Trust versus Somers. Among other things, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act endeavors to protect whistleblowers who are defined as persons who provide information relating to a violation of the securities to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Employers are liable for discharging, harassing, or otherwise discriminating against a whistleblower because of any lawful act done by the whistleblower with respect to providing information to the commission in accordance with securities laws, initiating, testifying in, or assisting in any investigation or action of the commission based upon information provided by the commission in accordance with securities laws, or making disclosures that are required or protected under various statutes and regulations. In 2014, then Vice President of Digital Realty Trust, Paul Somers, reported to his senior management that he suspected securities laws violations by the company. He was subsequently terminated. Prior to his termination, Somers had expressed his concerns internally only, and not to the Securities and Exchange Commission. He sued Digital Realty Trust in federal district court, alleging unlawful whistleblower retaliation under Dodd-Frank. Digital Realty moved to dismiss the case, arguing that Somers did not qualify as a whistleblower because he had not reported his suspicions to the commission. The district court rejected that argument, and a divided panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit affirmed, concluding that whistleblower protection can extend to persons who have not actually reported suspected violations to the commission. This decision aggravated a split in the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeals on the issue, and the Supreme Court granted cert to resolve the conflict. By a vote of 9-0, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that Dodd-Frank's anti-retaliation whistleblower protection does not extend to an individual who has not reported a violation of securities laws to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Sotomayor filed a concurring opinion, which was joined by Justice Breyer. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment, which was joined by Justices Alito and Gorsuch. And now, to discuss the case, we have Todd Brownstein, Global Head of Legal Investigations at Willis Towers Watson.
February 21, 2018, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Digital Realty Trust v. Somers. This case addressed an issue about the scope of corporate whistleblower protections that divided the circuits over the last few years. The specific question raised was whether the whistleblower protections in the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010 cover only those individuals who make a report to the SEC, or whether they cover other plaintiffs as well, such as those who report only to a supervisor. In a unanimous decision written by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that the Dodd-Frank protections are only available to whistleblowers who have made a complaint to the SEC. This case could have significant implications for the viability of employee hotlines and other attempts by companies to address compliance problems internally. That's because the whistleblower protections offered by Dodd-Frank are much more generous than anything else available under federal law, including most notably those enacted in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. The decision in Digital Realty Trust gives corporate whistleblowers a strong incentive to file reports with the SEC, either concurrently with or instead of submitting such reports internally. Whistleblowers may actually prefer to report internally. Studies show that many feel a sense of loyalty to their company and only feel compelled to proceed externally when internal complaints are disregarded. However, the rule handed down in this case could induce such whistleblowers to file a report with the SEC as a simple matter of self-protection. And if corporate whistleblowers respond to such incentives in significant enough numbers, internal compliance programs could suffer materially. All of this is not to say that the decision was wrong as a matter of legal analysis. Indeed, the justices didn't seem to think it was a hard case at all, notwithstanding that two courts of appeals had gone the other way. The basic legal question in the case was how Congress used the term whistleblower in the anti-retaliation cause of action of the Dodd-Frank law. This cause of action prohibits employers from retaliating against whistleblowers who engage in three categories of conduct. First, those who provide information to the SEC as part of a financial incentive program that was also created by Dodd-Frank. Second, assisting in SEC investigations or actions based on information provided to the SEC in accordance with the same financial incentive program. And third, making disclosures that are required or protected under several other laws, including Sarbanes-Oxley. By cross-referencing these other laws, this Clause 3 protects disclosures to internal supervisors and a variety of other entities, including Congress and other federal agencies. However, the cause of action extends only to, quote, whistleblowers, unquote, and Congress included the definition of that term earlier in the same section. Under that definition, a whistleblower is anyone who provides information about a violation of the securities laws, quote, to the SEC, unquote. The statute noted that the definition applied, quote, in this section, a language that encompasses the new cause of action. The court held that on this basis, the case was easily resolved. In particular, the definition of whistleblower prescribes who is eligible for protection, namely an individual who provides pertinent information, quote, to the commission. The rest of the cause of action describes what is protected, including, among other things, reports to supervisors that are protected under Sarbanes-Oxley. That is, the cause of action does protect the act of submitting a whistleblowing complaint to a supervisor within a company, but only if the individual has also submitted the report to the SEC. If you only submitted the complaint internally without going to the SEC and you are fired as a result, you may have recourse under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, but not under the stronger protections of Dodd-Frank. Apart from this textual argument that the statute's definition of whistleblower governed the case, the court also argued that the purpose of Dodd-Frank pointed in the same direction. In particular, the court cited a Senate committee report for the proposition that the core objective of Dodd-Frank's whistleblower program was to motivate those who know of securities law violations to, quote, tell the SEC, unquote. Thus, both the financial incentive program that I mentioned a few minutes ago and the anti-retaliation provision work hand in glove to motivate those who know of illegal activity to tell the SEC. By contrast, the Sarbanes-Oxley anti-retaliation cause of action, which unequivocally protects internal whistleblowers, had a much more far-reaching objective, that is, disturbing a corporate code of silence that discouraged employees from reporting fraud both externally and internally. The court made short work of arguments by the respondent, Summers, that the Dodd-Frank cause of action actually operates more broadly to protect whistleblowers who haven't reported to the SEC. First, the court didn't agree that its holding would gut much of the protection afforded by the cause of action. Rather, the court emphasized that its reading will protect employees who report misconduct to both the SEC and to another entity, such as an internal supervisor, but who suffer retaliation only because of the non-SEC disclosure. The court noted that such dual reporting instances are hardly unheard of. It pointed to statistics cited by the government showing that 80% of those who received money from the SEC Financial Awards Program in 2016 had reported internally first. In any event, the court stated that even if its interpretation protected only a small number of individuals, it was still bound to give effect to the statutory language. Second, the court was unmoved by claims that its interpretation would create an unusual statutory scheme. Under the court's holding, identical misconduct, that is, retaliating against an employee for internal reporting, will be punished or not punished based on the happenstance of a separate report to the SEC, of which the employer may not even be aware. But the court again pointed to Dodd-Frank's aim of motivating reports to the SEC. In view of that aim, it is understandable that the retaliation protections would be reserved for employees who have done what the statute seeks to achieve, that is, go to the SEC. Last but not least, the court brushed aside the Ninth Circuit's holding in the proceedings below that this was fundamentally a Chevron case. Not long after the Dodd-Frank Act, the SEC had issued a rule consistent with Summers' position that for purposes of the anti-retaliation provision, the term whistleblower had a broader meaning than the statutory definition. The court held that this case was resolved at Chevron Step 1. Congress had directly spoken to the precise question at issue by defining whistleblower as requiring a report to the SEC. Since the statute contained no ambiguity, the SEC's contrary view was entitled to no deference, according to the court. It's worth noting that this is the third time in the last 5 years that a legal position advanced by the SEC has lost unanimously in the Supreme Court. In both Gabelli v. SEC in 2013 and Kokesh v. SEC last year, the court rejected the commission's attempts for more generous statutes of limitations. Now, Digital Realty Trust v. Summers becomes the third in a trio of embarrassing setbacks for the commission. Finally, Justice Ginsburg's opinion for the court was accompanied by two brief concurrences. Justice Thomas wrote separately to emphasize that he would have resolved the case based solely on the text rather than on the supposed purpose of the statute as derived primarily from a single Senate report. He was joined in this concurrence by Justices Alito and Gorsuch. In response to Justice Thomas, Justice Sotomayor wrote separately to defend the use of legislative history in some circumstances as a helpful tool for resolving ambiguous or complex statutes. She was joined by Justice Breyer. So that's a wrap on Digital Realty Trust versus Summers. Not one of the blockbusters of this term, but as mentioned before, certainly a case that could have ramifications for corporate compliance programs throughout the country.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.